We've known about the overrepresentation of students of color, in particular black students, for a long time, since the mid-1970s, when it was studied by the Children's Defense Fund. It's a fairly typical reaction in the public and I think in academia sometimes to assume that that is due to the characteristics of the students who are being suspended. So this study really was meant to more directly address that. Typically, hypothesis or the rationale that's offered is that African American students are, unfortunately, in our society, more likely to be coming from a higher poverty environment, and that the disadvantages associated with that do not prepare those students as well to face the rules and regulations of schools that are really necessary for keeping a safe and orderly environment. And so those students come into contact with the disciplinary system more frequently as a result of that. The color of discipline looked at 19 middle schools in one large urban school district to specifically test those things, to look at the correlation with poverty, and to look at whether black students engage in more severe levels of behavior. Both of those things have been fairly widely studied in the literature. I actually will talk about our study first, because there's actually been more study of both of these areas. One of the things that Color of Discipline looked at was just the contribution of poverty to an overall equation predicting racial disparities in discipline. And what we found was that poverty made only a small and inconsistent contribution to discipline and to the probability of discipline. That is a finding that has since been replicated in virtually every multivariate study, that if you control for poverty, the relationship between race and say rates of out of school suspension and expulsion is not explained. It's a bit of a statistical concept to talk about a multivariate study, but what it means is that we hold poverty constant while testing relationships. And so practically what that means is that yes, there are differences between black and white students in rates of suspension in high poverty schools, but we also find the same relationship. Black students are also more likely to be suspended than white students in what we would regard as middle class schools, and they are more likely to be suspended than white students in our most highly resourced schools. That's been a common finding across a number of studies. The other thing that we took a look at in the Color of Discipline was specific referrals to the office, on the assumption that if black students were engaging in more serious behavior, that they would be referred to the office for more serious reasons, and those would be the reasons that they would be suspended. As I said, we looked at all 19 middle schools, and out of the 24 possible infractions, there were only 8 infractions in which there were any racial differences between the reasons that white and black students were sent to the office. So things like fighting or gang behavior, there weren't any differences between those in terms of how likely black or white students were to be referred to the office. Where we did find differences was in something that appears to be a kind of along the dimension of subjective and objective reasons. So the white students were referred to the office more for vandalism or being out of area. The black students were referred to the office more for things like disrespect and loitering. Threat is interesting. Was one of the things that African American students were referred for. It was very difficult. Which is a more serious infraction? Is smoking, which white students were referred more for, more serious than say loitering? It's hard to say. If we look at the most serious things that the black and white students were referred for, say vandalism versus threat, you can't really say which is more serious. Threat could be fairly serious, but what is very clear across the findings that we had was that the reasons that black students were referred were more subjective reasons. You know, even if you're talking about threat, threat is something that's dependent on the perceptions of the person being threatened. This was one of the first studies to look specifically at that issue, but a number of studies have since looked at this issue. There's a paper specifically on this, a supplementary paper on the Disciplinary Disparities Collaborative website that lists a number of these studies that have looked at that. One of the studies that I think makes among the strongest cases for this was a study done by Bradshaw and her colleagues, where they had teachers fill out behavioral rating scales on the students in their class, and then tracked rates of referral to the office disciplinary referrals. And even after controlling for those ratings on externalizing disruptive behavior, so in other words, the teachers rated the degree to which these students were disruptive, engaging in externalizing behavior. Even after controlling for that, black students were still referred to the office more than white students from that class, even after controlling then for teachers' own perceptions of whether the kid was in fact more likely to be disruptive in the class. The color of discipline is by far not alone in finding that poverty and differential rates of behavior don't account for differences in disparities in discipline that we see. That's not to say that poverty doesn't make a contribution to whether a student is referred for discipline, but oftentimes when we look at data, we have to bear in mind that just predicting overall rate of something doesn't necessarily mean we're predicting the actual racial disparities between those things.
Okay. So basically, you can't really prove why they get a disproportionate amount of discipline. So you and other researchers have said about testing theories, and all you can do is say this theory doesn't prove it, this and this other theory doesn't show why. So do you have another theory on why?
Well, actually, there have been studies that really have looked at the things that do go along with overrepresentation. One of the predictors appears to be percentage of black enrollment, simply the number of black students in a school, and a number of researchers have found that is predictive of not only suspension, expulsion, but zero tolerance, arrest rates, and a number of more serious infractions.
In which way? This is, like the more...
The higher the rate of black students in a school, the more likely a school is to use more punitive approaches. And again, this has been found even when controlling for demographics. So if we were to compare two urban schools, the school with a higher rate of black students would have a higher rate of punitive discipline. But that would also hold true in a more suburban, more resourced schools. The school out of two schools, all things being equal, that had the higher black enrollment would be likely to use more punitive approaches. Ann Gregory and her colleagues looked at schools that had high expectations for students, but also provided high degrees of support for students in meeting those expectations. And they found that schools that were the highest in terms of structure and support had lower rates of suspension and lower rates of disproportionality, and also, interestingly enough, lower rates of bullying. Classroom management appears to be a factor. One study looked at 80 students who were the most defiant in a school district, 80 African-American students, and found that if you looked across all of their classes and where referrals were made to the office, that only 14% of those students were consistently found to be defiant or were referred for defiance across all of their teachers. The vast majority of students, it was a student-teacher interaction. They were defiant and or referred for defiance in less than half their classes. So it really strongly suggests that there's something going on at the classroom level in terms of classroom management capabilities. The diversity of schools, as far as teachers, appears to be a relevant variable. Schools where there is a closer match between the diversity of the teaching force and the diversity of the student body appear to have lower rates of disproportionality and suspension. Interestingly enough, the race of the principal doesn't seem to be connected with rates of disciplinary disparities.
Another finding was that, or something I read, and I've read so much stuff lately, was that this is noticed by not only the black kids, but also the white kids.
Yes, yeah, yeah. There was a study done by Rosemary Sheets that interviewed both white and African-American students and did find that there was a recognition on the part of all students that this included also Latino students, that both the African-American and the Latino students were more likely to be referred to the office. What was interesting was some of the other findings of that study. The white students and teachers were interviewed about this, tended to think that those disparities were more accidental, that that wasn't really intentional, it wasn't really meant, it just happened. The students of color believed that those differences were really intentional. One of the things that was most striking to me from that study was a question about the rules. And the white students, based on these findings, said, well, you know, there are rules, they just tend not to be applied fairly. And the students of color basically said there are no rules, that you know, they apply these punishments based on however they want to at the moment, which is a pretty powerful message that kids are getting from these disparities.
You mean when you said the black kids said there were no rules, meaning no rules about how they should behave, or no rules that teachers should follow on making judgments.
In other words, that the rules were applied so inconsistently that there might as well not be any rules. That the actual rules really didn't maybe apply to them. That was their experience.
So that
it was pretty arbitrary whether they were being referred to the office or suspended or expelled. And I think that's a pretty powerful message that disparities in discipline give. Like any other consequence, it is necessary to monitor the degree of racial disparities. You pointed out for major consequences that, like exclusionary discipline, that there are very large gaps. There can also be large gaps in smaller consequences, in detention, and in school suspension. And while those are more minor consequences, it still says something that our students of color are being referred to those things at a higher rate. So it's something that schools should be looking at regardless of their disciplinary system, is to say, is this being applied fairly across all students? We shouldn't just say, well, this is just a problem of poor kids behaving badly, but be reflective about what might be creating the issues. Yes, there may be a problem with kids from some neighborhoods, or there may be certain kids that are engaging in higher rates of disruptive behavior, but it may also be that there are practices or policies going on in our schools that are also making a contribution to these rates of disparity. And I think the lesson from what we know of the research is that when schools and districts see these kinds of disparities, that it's time to put together a school team to look more closely at their own data, say, where are these things coming from? Do we see these disparities in certain schools? Do we see these at certain grade levels? Do we see higher rates of referrals from certain classrooms?
Right.
And then to develop hypotheses about and ideas about what we could do to make change. I just want to say that educators are really good problem solvers if they take a close look at their own data and are willing to be reflective about that data. I find that schools that I work with, once they get to a certain point of being willing to work on this data, are very creative in the solutions that they can apply. But the first piece is being willing to be self-reflective.